This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Summers seem to be getting hotter, winters more brutal, storms more devastating. Climate change threatens our future. The threat is so large, it's hard to know what we can do about it. The magnitude of the problem can be paralyzing. But a growing number of young people have thrown off the paralysis to become engaged in direct action. Today, we meet two high school students who are actively involved in the fight to reverse the devastating impact of our dependence on fossil fuels. Mary Ella Stevens engaged in a weekly school strike to sit outside the Charlotte Mecklenburg building every Friday for 23 weeks. She's director of Earth Uprising Charlotte, vice president of North Carolina Climate Strike, also a freshman at Myers Park High School in Charlotte. Welcome to the show, Mary Ellis.
Thank you.
Hallie Turner is here. She's a 17-year-old senior at Enloe High School in Raleigh. At the age of 13, she petitioned the state to protect North Carolina's climate system. She's one of a growing number of young people suing the government over climate change. Hallie, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Mary Ellis, tell us what made you get involved in the climate change movement.
So as part of my eighth grade curriculum, we had to select a subject to do a year-long research project on, and I selected the climate crisis. And as I read more and more about it and did more research, I realized how dire the crisis was and how important it was that we took action now. And I realized that I couldn't just sit still and do nothing anymore. So as part of my research, I stumbled upon the speeches and actions of Greta Thunberg, and I was inspired by her strikes to bring the strikes to America and start striking in Charlotte.
Well, Hallie, tell us more about Greta Thunberg and what part she may have played in your involvement.
Well, when I first learned about the climate crisis and decided I wanted to take action, I was in fourth grade, so that Greta Thunberg hadn't made international news by that point. I was first inspired by Al Gore's book, A Kid's Version of an Inconvenient Truth, and I read that, and I was shocked by the magnitude of the crisis, but also by how little I felt people were talking about it, and how it was communities that were often poor communities and communities of color that were contributing the least to the climate crisis, but being affected the most by it.
And of course, Greta Thunberg, Mary Ellis, tell us about her, the young Swedish activist who got worldwide attention for the action she took. Tell us more about her, Mary Ellis.
So Greta Thunberg is 16, and August of last year, she decided that instead of going to school, she was going to sit outside the Swedish parliament and demand climate action. And she was recently nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize, and if she wins, she'll be the youngest person ever, which is super cool. And she just finished a 2-week voyage across the Atlantic in a sailboat that was a zero carbon emissions sailboat to attend the UN Climate Summit in New York.
Hallie, tell us more about your involvement in fourth grade. I mean, you said a mouthful there. You talked about minority communities. Those least involved are the most affected, or the least culpable are the most affected. And this is all things that you were becoming aware of in fourth grade. How did you learn all that?
So when I first figured out about the climate crisis at the library, I immediately wanted to do more research online, and I basically just used Google and was finding out everything that I could, and then I have learned about it in school since then, but I...
Well, what about it in fourth grade? Because you could have a lot on your mind in fourth grade, other than what's happening in communities that may or may not be yours.
What scares me the most about the climate crisis is that it's my generation, the young people of today, that are being the most impacted by it and have to deal with the decisions that leaders make today about our futures. So I think that's what struck me even in fourth grade, was that it was my generation that's going to be at stake here.
Mary Ellis, assuming that something like that is true for you as well, that your generation is affected, what happens when you talk with other people, your peers, about this? Do they feel the urgency of this generally, or what kind of conversations are you having?
Definitely. I think a large majority of the people that I talk to that are my age are really worried about this, and they do recognize the magnitude of this issue. And a lot of my friends have expressed interest in taking action, whether through the strikes or through other forms of direct action. But yeah, we're all pretty anxious for our futures because it is going to be devastating.
What about what other forms of action, and how do those conversations go? Because as I suggested it when I introduced this segment, a lot of people feel paralyzed. This is way over our heads. It's too much. It's too complicated. There are too many factors involved outside of our control, and a sense that any action I might take might not be enough. I'm sure that's been part of your conversation. And if it has, where does it go from there? I'll stick with you for a minute, Mary Ellis.
That's definitely part of the conversation. There is kind of a feeling of hopelessness, but I refused to accept it. And so I recognized that as an individual, there's not a ton that I can do, but I'm going to do every single thing that I can. And so a lot of my friends who've been interested in taking action, they're like, what's something I can do that's going to actively make a difference? And what I always tell people is just talk about it as much as you can. If someone mentions their weather, you know, roll that into the fact that storms are worsening. And just talk about it as much as possible, because the more that we talk about it, the more people realize how urgent this is. So that's one of the things that I really like to tell people to do. But speaking at public forums, testifying in front of the city council, if you can, lobbying or writing representatives are all really important things you can do, because it's although individual action is really important, we need action on a global scale.
Well, Hallie, I know you're one of a group of young people petitioning the government for change. Talk about your lawsuit against the state.
When I first wanted to get involved with climate activism, I came across the work that Our Children's Trust is doing. They're the group that's supporting the 21 plaintiffs nationally that are suing the federal government to protect natural resources for future generations. And I'm involved with a petition in North Carolina asking the state to do the same thing. And that's something that I really care about. And I believe that it's the government's responsibility to protect natural resources for my generation.
How does the suit work? What is it that you're actually asking for?
So my original petition was asking the North Carolina Environmental Management Commission to reduce greenhouse gases in the state to zero by 2050.
And is that something you can do? You can say, I'm a citizen of this state, and I say you need to bring these standards, you need to bring emissions down to zero by this year.
The work that Our Children's Trust does is based on something called the public trust doctrine, which is the idea that it's the government's moral and legal responsibility to protect the planet for future generations.
Yeah, and that we are the government. I mean, I think this is what's interesting about this in a subtext in your lawsuit is that when people blame the government for things or say the government is the cause of all of their problems, we are the government. And so what you're saying in this suit is, it's me. We now collectively have a responsibility to do something about this. You're our agent. You know, we've deputized you. So get busy and do my work, do our work.
And I'm not even 18 yet. I'm not able to vote right now. So it's definitely important to me that my voice and the voice of my generation is heard even when we're not 18 yet.
So there's legal action, a tried and true way of getting things to change. Mary Ellis, you sit in front of the Charlotte Mecklenburg Center and have gone on strike on Fridays to do this. Tell us about that action, about that decision and the strategy that, or the tactic, I should say, that you've adopted. Why do that and how has it worked out for you?
So the whole mission behind Fridays for Future is because we're under 18, we can't vote, we can't run for office. The one thing we can do is disrupt the system. So we disrupt the system in the only way that we can, which is we don't go to school. So every Friday, we sit outside our local parliament and demand climate action. And so I've gotten to meet and talk to a large majority of the Charlotte City Council, and I've gotten to talk to them about legislation and my hopes for the future of our city. And it's been really, really nice to have that reception, that positive reception from our local government.
Has it been that? I mean, talk about the reception and tell us about the conversations you're having with policymakers.
So the reception from our city council has been really positive. They've all at least wanted to hear what I had to say. And so one thing that I've been working on is the implementation of SEAP, which is the Strategic Energy Action Plan, which was a resolution passed unanimously by the city council saying that the city government buildings and the city vehicles will be zero carbon emissions by 2030. And that Charlotte is going to aim to be a low-carbon city by 2050. And so that's one of the things that I've worked on is rapid implementation of that and, you know, getting that beyond just a pledge and into direct action.
Hallie, I know you're scheduled to speak at the Triangle Climate Strike Rally in Raleigh. What's your message?
One of the things that I want to talk about when I speak there is that oftentimes adults in the climate movement and just adults in general look at the work that young people are doing and say, oh, that's so inspiring. I'm glad we have teenagers like you to save the world. And for me, I find it hard to think of climate activism as inspiring just because the fact that we're fighting for something that we so fundamentally deserve, it shouldn't be like that in the first place. So that's something that I want to talk about is adults that are inspired by the work that we're doing should take that inspiration and turn it into action and use their power and their positions of privilege to show up for younger generations and communities that are most impacted by climate change. Because yes, it's great that young people are standing up for their future, but also we shouldn't have to be.
What kind of action? What should they be doing?
Something that we're doing at the strike on Friday in Raleigh is having letters that we are signing and sending to representatives. And also beyond that, like Mary Ellis was talking about, incorporating conversations about climate change into our day-to-day life and pressuring our leaders and showing them that climate change is not an issue that we're just going to forget about. And it's something that has a very real, tangible impact on our futures that we have to figure out a way to fix.
Mary Ellis, here's the elephant in the room. We can talk about lawsuits and we can talk about going to the parliament and the legislature and city council. Governing bodies and asking for changes in the rules. Well, the fact is we're all complicit in this. Every time we buy another gallon of gas, every time we buy something online and have it sent to our house, everything we do in a consumer economy contributes to climate change, which means we all have a responsibility in our behavior, in our purchasing, in our actions as consumers and citizens to do something about it. And that suggests perhaps some form of doing less, which nobody likes to hear. Is that any part of your conversation? And how does it go when it gets to the very personal part of this?
So yeah, individual action is very important. And it's one of the things that is the most easy to change on an individual level is meat consumption and energy use. But more important than light bulbs are laws. So what I like to talk to people about is, yeah, change your light bulbs, but work harder on changing your laws. And so although it is very, very important that on an individual level, we're trying to minimize waste and minimize our personal carbon emissions, more important is to work on lobbying and getting corporations and the different businesses that are stealing our future is that they're the ones that are the most directly responsible. So yes, individual action is extremely important, but more important than that is action, is political action on a global scale.
Well, but let me press you on that, Mary Ellis, because those corporations depend on us buying their stuff. So they can't keep doing what they do if we don't keep buying their stuff. And every time we buy their stuff, they say, hey, what are you talking about? The people want this. Why are you telling me to stop? People want it, and they can point to their ledger and show you their sales increases and tell you that you are the one who's got it wrong. What about that part of it, our consumption? Not just in light bulbs, but in everything we do.
And that is true, because that is the most mainstream option, because that is the easiest option. And so although it's definitely our responsibility to invest in low waste options and options that are more environmentally responsible, it is also the responsibility of companies to realize that this is not going to be economically stable for them. Like investing in carbon and non-sustainable forms of energy isn't going to be responsible for them or for their consumers in the long run.
Hallie, what about you in those difficult conversations with individuals? Do you have those, and what's your message there?
I agree completely that everyone can take lifestyle steps and lifestyle changes in their own lives to try and leave less of a carbon footprint and try to live more sustainably. But at the end of the day, if we don't have laws and we don't have corporations that are listening to the children that want to have a livable planet, we're not going to get anything done. So those things are absolutely valuable, and I encourage everyone to do what they can. But we do need a massive societal shift away from our consumption of fossil fuels.
We are talking with youth climate change activist Mary Ellis Stevens, director of Earth Uprising Charlotte and vice president of North Carolina Climate Strike. Mary's going to be speaking at the Global Climate Strike Rally in Charlotte on September 20th. Hallie Turner is a senior at Enloe High School in Raleigh. She is going to speak Friday at the Triangle Climate Strike event at Halifax Mall. And joining the conversation now is a man who knows firsthand the impact of the environmental degradation and fossil fuels, Bobby Jones, organizer and president of the Down East Coal Ash Environmental and Social Justice Coalition. It's an organization he created in 2014 after the Dan River coal ash spill. Welcome, Bobby. Welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Talk about the impact of that spill and that plant in Goldsboro, where I know you're working, the impact that's had on the community.
Well, you know, between the Neuse River, our beloved Neuse River, and our community, we have 6 million tons of poisonous coal ash as a result of the Duke Energy's HF Leap plant that's been burning coal since the early 50s until it was retired in 2012. That has impacted our community tremendously. Everything from the health of individuals. I got into this in 2014, like you said. I was inspired by actually a radio personality by the name of Robin Wade Harvey. I don't know if you know her or not, mm-hmm. but she was a very loud and strong voice, and she kind of helped me connect the dots between the sickness, the high rates of illness, heavy metal illness in Wayne County, in the coal ash. Of course, Robin is no longer with us. She died from cancer about 2 years ago, so have a lot of other people that have been involved in this struggle. In addition, I can't talk about what this poison have done to my environment without talking about the impact of the storms. We've had, not including Dorian, we've had two 500-year hurricanes and floods, 16 and 18, in less than 3 years, and our community was devastated. We were not prepared for it. So I'm very concerned that we take action to involve our communities, frontline communities, impacted communities, and whatever planning that we do, and that we be proactively engaged in some resilience planning that includes getting away from these fossil fuels that's destroying our environment and getting into clean energy that's going to provide clean jobs, and that's going to be restorative instead of taken away and harmful to our community and our environment.
As you make your case in a community that has been perhaps historically disenfranchised and disadvantaged by large corporations and this economy in general, and then you have to take on Duke Energy, how is your message received?
Well, that is it's a very good question, in that, you know, we live in a society where money is very, very important. Duke has a lot of money. Duke does not hesitate to spread that money around when it comes to our elected officials. You know, we the representation that we're getting from our elected officials, you know, if we're disenfranchised, we can't afford it. They're getting the better representation. House Bill 630, which was the original bill on how to manage and deal with this coal ash, literally was a legislation that was bought and paid for by Duke Energy. Now we've confronted with Senate Bill 559, a very, very similar scenario. It is a challenge, but one of my major concerns is that we get dirty money out of politics, and we can't do that without ending this monopoly that Duke, this chokehold that Duke has on the North Carolinians.
But and just very briefly, Bobby, when you send this message out to your community, are they telling you there's nothing we can do about it, or do people sign on?
Well, we've got some folks that have had some struggles and had some losses, but I'm proud to say that on February the 13th, we formed a coalition that's called Energy Justice NC. Stop the Duke Monopoly with NC Warren and 14 other organizations. Actually, it's growing every day. And since that time, we as a community do have some hope that we can end this chokehold that we have on our communities, and that we can look forward to some clean jobs. Look forward for our community. Just because we're black and brown and poor white, that we're not going to be preyed upon. So we're optimistic about that.
Thank you very much. Bobby Jones, organizer and president of Down East Coal Ash Environmental and Social Justice Coalition. Also, Mary Ella Stevens, youth climate activist in Charlotte, and Hallie Turner, senior at Enloe High School in Raleigh, also a youth climate activist. Thank all of you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just ahead, the creator of XKCD, a new book of life hacks based on over-the-top science. Stay with us on The State of Things.